This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Coming up, a major development in the case of a teen accused of plotting to blow up his school in Waseca. Also, a man rescues a mother and a baby from a fire in St. Paul. Even though it's over, flooding is affecting shipping in the Mississippi River. And don't get spoofed on your cell phone. It's Tuesday, July 29th. I'm John Wanamaker. A judge has dismissed four charges of attempted first-degree murder against John Ledoux, the Waseca teenager accused of planning to blow up his school. Peter Cox has more.
Judge Gerald Wolf's order was filed yesterday in Waseca County District Court. John Ledoux's attorney, Don Johnson, says his family is hoping he can live with them.
His parents would love to have him come back home, but they're concerned about the community's response to him returning home. And our focus now is that he receive the psychological help that everyone is now aware that he needs.
Ledoux's father, David Ledoux, told NPR News he didn't think prosecutors ever had just cause to charge his 17-year-old son with four counts of attempted murder. John Ledoux still faces six counts of possession of explosive devices. But Johnson says any possible sentence is substantially less with the murder charges dismissed. A hearing is set for tomorrow about whether he should be certified to stand trial as an adult. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Fire officials say a passerby rescued a mother and baby from a burning duplex in St. Paul last night. The 34-year-old man had stepped outside a North End restaurant to smoke. He spotted smoke coming from a nearby home and ran to the burning structure. He spotted an open window, and when he pushed in the screen, he could see a woman in her 20s holding an infant. The woman handed the 7-month-old baby to him, and he then pulled the woman from the window. St. Paul Fire Marshal Steve Zachert says the fire destroyed the house and was apparently intentionally set. This summer's flooding has brought shipping to a halt at several places along the Mississippi River. The Army Corps of Engineers says floodwaters brought a lot of sediment into the river, filling in the 9-foot shipping channel near Winona and near Wabasha. There isn't enough water for tows and barges to pass through now. Steve Tapp is operations manager with the Corps of Engineers. He says the high water, followed by a relatively low flow of the river, left more sediment than the Corps could keep up with.
When the water's that high, it's moving a lot of sediment around, and it doesn't give us a chance to dredge because if we go out there and try to dredge with that high water, it's just filling the holes in as we're digging them. So I've been doing this for 25 years, and I haven't seen conditions like this in that time frame.
Tapp says the Corps hopes to have the channel back open and resume shipping in early August, although low water could delay the opening further. A Coon Rapids woman is urging members of Minnesota's Liberian community to postpone travel to the West African nation to avoid contracting or spreading Ebola. DeConte Sawyer's husband died from the deadly virus last week. Patrick Sawyer had been living in Liberia since 2012, and Sawyer says he likely contracted the disease from his sister, who died 2 weeks ago and later tested positive for Ebola. Sawyer says she is setting up an organization to help Ebola victims in Liberia so some good can come from her family's loss.
Patrick's gone. My three daughters will never get to know their fathers, and I don't want any other families to have to experience this. Anything I can do on my part from stopping this from happening, I want to do.
Sawyer's group is called Concerned Liberians Against Ebola. She says the organization will funnel donations and supplies to Global Health Ministries and Samaritan's Purse. Both groups are already on the ground in Liberia. The Better Business Bureau is warning Minnesotans about a suspected identity theft operation that targets people by spoofing their cell phone numbers on caller ID. Those who pick up the call will hear a voice recording about lowering credit card interest rates and a request for credit card information. Spokesperson Dan Hendrickson says similar calls have been reported previously in other states.
Never give out any financial information over the phone. Even if the call sounds legitimate, even if it sounds like it could be your bank or somebody, we're telling people it's best to end the phone call, contact your bank or credit card company and say, look, I just got this phone call. Here's what they told me. Is this legitimate? And verify that.
A spokesperson for the Minnesota Department of Commerce says the agency hasn't yet received any reports of the robocalls, but that people can report suspected scam calls to the agency for investigation. This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. General Mills says it wants to significantly cut greenhouse gas emissions by its own operations and those of suppliers and other business partners. The Golden Valley-based company is also joining a coalition of companies that will advocate for sustainable climate and clean energy policies. General Mills Chief Sustainability Officer Jerry Lynch says it's about protecting the environment and the company's future.
When you look at our business and providing consumers with the food that they need for their busy lives, making sure that Mother Nature continues to run really well is very important to us.
General Mills says climate change poses a great threat to food production and price stability. The company pledges to sustainably source 100% of 10 key ingredients by 2020. In addition, General Mills is trying to reduce greenhouse gas production by dairy producers, and it vows to get all of its palm oil from sustainable sources by 2015. A woman arrested in Fargo last week after allegedly causing a disturbance on an Allegiant Airlines flight has been arrested again. 35-year-old Allison Johnson was arrested yesterday for criminal trespass and taken to detox after twice being asked to leave Hector International Airport. She pleaded guilty last week to resisting a police officer. She said in court that she's an alcoholic and doesn't remember what happened in the plane incident on July 23rd. State transportation and law enforcement officials are hoping higher fines will convince motorists to slow down in highway construction zones. Starting Friday, the penalty for speeding in a designated work zone jumps from $212 to $300 statewide. Lawmakers passed the measure earlier this year to try to better protect highway workers. 31 people have been killed in Minnesota work zones since 2010. Lieutenant Colonel Matt Langer of the Minnesota State Patrol says work zone accidents are preventable if drivers pay attention and slow down.
The goal of the $300 fine is to deter people in the first place so that we don't have to take enforcement action. And again, that's our goal. But for those drivers that don't pay attention and come through the work zones over the posted speed limit, we hope to stop them and issue a citation before something bad happens.
State transportation officials say there are more than 1,700 work zone crashes each year in Minnesota. The number of landlords suing the city of La Crosse over a new ordinance has grown significantly. Initially, two landlords filed a lawsuit over the new requirement that they register their property annually and pay a fee. More than 30 landlords representing some 200 or more rental properties in the city have joined the lawsuit. Their attorney tells WKBT-TV that according to state law, the city can't require any more information than it does from residential property owners. The city's mayor says the new ordinance was not meant to discriminate against rental properties, but to make sure they are safe for renters and to help revitalize deteriorating neighborhoods. A judge is expected to make a ruling on the lawsuit next month. And finally, pipelines carrying crude oil across Minnesota are buried, usually 3 to 4 feet below ground. But in some locations where those pipelines cross rivers, erosion has exposed pipes to the elements. In northwest Minnesota, flooding has uncovered several Enbridge Corporation pipelines crossing a river in Marshall County. A state official says that exposure increases the risk of pipelines being damaged, but no law requires the exposed pipes be reburied. Dan Gunderson explains.
Like many streams in the Red River Valley, the Tamarack River twists and winds its way across the landscape. The river channel constantly changes shape as floodwaters erode the soil. The Tamarack flows into the Red River about 2 hours north of Moorhead. Local farmer Chad Jerome drives an all-terrain vehicle along the edge of a wheat field next to the river. 7 Enbridge pipelines cross the Tamarack in a grassy swath carved out of the trees that flank the river. These lines primarily carry crude oil from Canada. 3 of the 7 pipelines are exposed by erosion.
Look at that. Hey. Is that the pipe right there?
Jerome says he's seen an exposed pipe here for the 14 years he's planted and harvested fields along the river, but he didn't realize how many pipelines were uncovered.
I guess I have faith that Enbridge knows, you know, what they're doing and that their safety measures are in place and that, you know, it's not an issue.
Some pipes are suspended across the river channel, which is about 30 feet wide. In one case, a pipe is exposed along the river channel for about 100 feet. Steel legs have been added to stabilize that pipe. John Wolfgram is chief engineer with the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety. The agency enforces federal rules for pipelines in the state.
There are certainly risks. You know, if you had log jams and, you know, things like that that could put a pipeline at risk, yes.
Wolfgram says the longer a pipe is exposed, the greater the risk. But determining the level of risk is up to Enbridge, not the Office of Pipeline Safety. It's unclear how long these pipes have been exposed. Wolfgram says the only time a state inspector visited the site, in 2007, pipes were exposed. While federal regulations specify how deep pipelines must be buried, Wolfgram says those rules only apply during initial construction.
If it does become exposed, it more or less becomes a requirement for the operator to monitor that and to inspect it. But there isn't necessarily any requirement making them bury the pipeline again.
Wolfgram says he's aware of several locations across the state where exposed pipelines cross rivers or ditches. An Enbridge official says the company has exposed pipes at a handful of Minnesota river crossings. Federal regulations say only that an exposed pipe must be checked for corrosion every 3 years. Enbridge began inspecting exposed pipes at the Tamarack site in 2009. Two of the exposed pipelines were built in the 1960s. A third was built in 2010. Enbridge spokesperson Becky Hossie says the lines are safe.
What's exposed is not posing any risk. It's all a risk-benefit analysis. We have Enbridge crews out there every couple weeks just monitoring that river crossing and making sure that those pipelines that are exposed are operating safely.
Hossie initially said Enbridge was not planning to rebury the lines. In a later conversation, she changed that statement, saying Enbridge is finalizing plans to stabilize one of the pipes this fall and to reroute two of the lines next year. Hossie says a third line is slated for replacement in 2017. The company has not yet filed any plans with the Minnesota DNR, which issues permits to build utilities across a river. Members of Congress questioned if federal river crossing regulations were adequate after a pipeline crossing the Yellowstone River in Montana ruptured in 2011. A study last year by the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration found depletion of cover was a factor in 16 significant pipeline spills at river crossings since 1991. But the agency later told Congress no additional rules were needed. Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News in Marshall County.
And that's the NPR News update for Tuesday, July 29th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.